If you're not into talent, I got bad news. This isn't the episode for you. Today, I'm joined by Diane Dagger, the AVP of Talent Acquisition at ModMed. You're gonna see that I really enjoyed this conversation. We share a passion about talent acquisition that's incredible. And I love talking to Diane about when she first joined ModMed and it was only 20 people and it's now 2,000, how she got into the talent acquisition industry and what makes a great TA function. Diane really knows her stuff and has so much to offer and great insights. I know I learned a lot. I think you will too. I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. Today, we are joined by a very special guest. We are joined by Diane Dagger. She is the Associate Vice President of Talent Acquisition at ModMed. Diane, how are you doing today?
Hi, Oz. I'm doing well. How are you?
I got to be honest, I'm pretty excited about this conversation. You and I share a lot of passion about talent and how to go about creating a great talent acquisition function and what are the best principles. And so I feel like I've got simpatico over here and I'm just excited to dive into it. I don't always get that. Sometimes we get CIOs, sometimes we get CEOs. I'm excited to talk to somebody that's as passionate about the space that I'm in as you are. So I'm pumped about that. Let's start there.
All right.
How did you get into talent acquisition?
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, how does anyone get into talent acquisition? I started my career in software. Actually, I was a software developer. That was my first job out of college. And while I enjoyed it, I did, and I learned a lot. It was becoming, you know, it was really at the time when it was very engineering oriented, walls without windows, you know, all of those things. And I realized I was really missing kind of the people aspect of you know, work. And so I moved to San Diego. This was back in 2000, without a job. You know, I resigned. I gave like 2 or 3 months notice. I packed my Jetta, drove across country, moved to San Diego, did not have a job. I'm like, oh, it's 2000. I'll find a job. And I kept getting offers for very similar type work, which was not what I wanted to do. And then I happened upon a staffing firm when I was in my job search, and they were at first looking to place me, but then, you know, at a client, but then they thought, well, why don't you join us? And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Technology and people, you know, kind of two of my favorite things coming together. And so I joined a late 2000, right at the time when the whole thing was imploding, you know, the
dot-com bubble. Yep.
And so, but really found that I enjoyed that process of, you know, finding really great talent and matching them with really great roles. And
yeah,
20 years later, here I am.
There we are. And sometimes, like we said, it's never usually, and funny, I started my career in technology, not in development and engineering, but in project management. And I was telling somebody the other day, like the most successful careers I know are not linear, they are circuitous. And I was even telling my daughter that you have to be open to pivot and take on new opportunities and new things. And when you didn't expect that was the plan. So many things I want to say there. So you moved to San Diego, which one of my favorite cities, not having any money. It's a pretty expensive city, but good warm weather and great people and just absolutely love it there. So that's awesome. I think that's great. And then I got to be honest. I mean, the staffing company must have been like manna from heaven, because especially at that time, not a ton of women in technology. Right. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But also not a ton of women who have done development and engineering and then are like, you know what, I might want to translate this into recruitment, talent acquisition. I can talk, I can build relationships with people. That is like the purple squirrel that we talk about in the industry. That must have been amazing, because you build credibility with people when you understand their space. We've hired some former engineers here, and sometimes it's gone well, sometimes it doesn't. Just depends on the person, like with anything. But I do find that, especially because, you know, I think technical recruitment is one of the most specialized recruitments, right? That once you have a broad base and knowledge there, it's much easier to translate that across operations and HR and finance or whatever else it may be. So I think that's awesome. So you worked on the agency side and then you moved into the corporate side, which is a move that some people make, some with varying degrees of success. I'm interested how the agency experience you think helped inform you as a corporate TA leader, if at all.
Sure. No, absolutely. I think that agency experience is great experience for a recruiter. It's a different motion, but there's a, and when I was in staffing, it was 100% commission. So kind of that old you eat what you kill type of mentality. And so there's a hustle there. I think that is really important. You have to always stay close to your candidate, kind of know what their pushes and pulls are, and be really, strong there. You can't take anything for granted, as well as on your client side, know what they're looking for. So I was in San Diego for 4 years in staffing. I made the move back to South Florida and stayed in staffing for 1 year before I made that transition into corporate staffing. And it kind of happened by accident, but there are no accidents. But the reason what pulled me into corporate staffing was really that opportunity to stay connected to both the business and the people. So being able to hire people and then watch them grow in their career. Mm-hmm. That was something that that's just something I get a lot of personal gratification out of.
A million percent. Whenever I tell people when I got into recruitment, I initially got into it because I thought I could do well at it. And that's always a good first start. I thought I could make money. Like you talked about, the commission is really good, right? If you do well. But over time, as time started to develop, you're absolutely right. It started to become way gratifying to watch people have success, right? Most of the time, if you're doing this right, you're changing people's lives in a dramatically positive way, right? And a lot of times following their career after they get a great new job, it's not like, an electrician or a plumber. Like, I've gotten some of the most heartfelt, genuine thank yous in my life and sincere appreciation for helping people find great opportunities or getting them out of toxic opportunities into better ones, or being laid off and worried about how they're going to pay their bills. I mean, it makes such a big impact when you do it right. Not everybody does it right, but I found that to be super gratifying. And you know what's really cool is I started doing this in 2008-09, right in that area, okay? And the people that I started working with, I was young and like I was kind of hungry, and I was meeting other people who were young and hungry in all different types of industries and spaces. You know what? Those people who I have made friendships with then have grown on to become executives at companies all over the place and are some of my best friends and best customers. So it's just really cool. Like a career ascension is something that I'm completely fascinated by. And I just love the level of relationships and depth you make. Like you said, it's a very gratifying feeling. You're at ModMed now. So I'm really interested. What compelled you to join that company? What excites you about the vision of that company? Why did you think you'd go there and make an impact?
It's one of my favorite stories, at least. It's interesting to me. Hopefully it's interesting to you. So when I joined ModMed, it was a really unique time in my life. My husband was in the middle of a career transition. He was also a software engineer moving into a Masters of Anesthesia program, which is really very rigorous training. Yes, I always get those big eyes when I say that. Our children were really young, 5 and 2 or 5 and 3. I was no longer in corporate staffing. I was actually helping to run a family business after someone in our family had passed away, which was very meaningful and interesting, and it was starting to steady. But I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do long term. It was also very convenient for me and where we were in our life. So my children were young. I had a lot of flexibility. My husband was doing rotations out of state, things like that. So when ModMed came to me, and it was through a CFO that I had worked with previously, I thought, this is interesting. I'm not sure about timing, but let's see. And when I talked to her, I had and still have a ton of respect for her. She described the company as the brightest group of people that she's worked with, and she's really bright. So she's like, there's just the intellectual horsepower is like so high, who are really passionate about, what we're doing, which is, helping healthcare work better, who are also really nice to work with. The ego quotient was not very high. So it's just low ego, really smart, bright, and passionate. And I was like, okay, I'm sold. I mean, it was just like such a compelling value proposition. And I met the principals, I met our two co-founders, and I knew that if I did not join ModMed, I would regret it. And I also knew that the company was going to grow. So she often jokes that I knew we were going to get bigger before she did, because I came in, I'm like, oh, you're asking for a part-time recruiter, but I think you really need a full-time recruiter. And she's like, no, I think we're fine with part-time. I'm like, oh, the company is growing. I just knew like the
excitement. How many employees did they have at that time?
About 20.
Oh my God. How big is it now?
Yeah, we're, you know, close to 2,000.
Wow, what amazing growth. And you were like essentially the talent acquisition department. So you played a big part in all these people that are at the company.
Yes, I like to think so, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been really gratifying. It's interesting. And going through that type of growth, and every stage of growth is a different state, is different and has unique challenges. So what worked when we were 20 people didn't work when we were 100. Didn't work when we were 250 or 500 or 1,000. And that's actually, to me, the beauty of a company like ModMed is every stage of growth, you have to like get better and push and drive to meet the needs. So
I love that story. I am so glad you told that. That is excellent. What a really cool journey. And like, I gotta be honest, like if somebody works in a startup environment and work with a lot of companies, sometimes the person that works at 20 is not the person that works at even 500, let alone 2,000. So super major kudos and credit to you for growing with the company. You must have some sort of growth mindset. You must have developed really good relationships. You must be really damn good at what you do. So major kudos. That doesn't happen that often, even with really smart, really great people. So I want to give you a ton of credit on that, especially in our business, because in our industry, a lot of times you do see some attrition and some turnover. So that's really a big time credit to you. When we talk, you've mentioned to me that you believe good hiring changes the world, which just kind of makes my soul flutter when you say something like that. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I think I shared, you know, when I was young, when I was little, growing up, I wanted to make the world a better place. Like that was, you know, a very aspirational personality. And, you know, for me, when you hire and you hire well, as you said, you're changing a life. You know, if you put somebody in a good role within a good company that there's a fit, that has such a material impact on their health, their mental health, their emotional health, the trajectory of their career, their family. And it also has impact for the company itself, you know, the person who's hiring, the team members there. So good hiring, I think, definitely makes the world a better place. You know, you put people in a good role and it's a good fit and, you know, people are happier and hopefully you don't have as many people honking at you at the red light just to move quickly or something like that. You know,
I mean, listen, from your mouth to God's ear, I like, for one thing I don't get and I don't understand, and I understand why it is the way it is, but it just doesn't make sense to me. And I want to change this, you know, one person at a time, is the stigma that sometimes can be accompanying our industry, the way people look at people in our industry sometimes. Just for me, it's a little bit frustrating. And here's kind of the epiphany I had when I was working in corporate America and I was hiring. I started hiring, and I was like, I've told the story before, but I was hiring. I was young. I wanted to get promoted. I knew that hiring was going to be important to me. I knew that my company needed to bring in great talent. Like, I knew, I looked at our competition and we needed to have better talent than them to be able to be successful. And I looked at how it impacted the individuals that we were interviewing with. And so I'm sitting there and I'm thinking in my head, okay, the company and the people, like my internal TA department and the agencies I'm working with, like, I don't know, like I'm not super impressed. It's not going as well as I would want. Very commoditized and transactional, particularly on the agency side. And yet I'm sitting there in myself thinking, this is really damn important. Like, this is like really important to the bottom line of the company. This is really important to the individual. Like, we need to be putting more care into this. Like, and then I've said before, like, I'm not necessarily going to say that we are on the same level in terms of giving back, because I'm very aspirational like you, of giving back to the community, say teachers or nurses or firefighters or whatever it might be, right? I mean, obviously that they're doing some incredible sacrifices in those roles. But gosh, I put what we're doing right below that, because I do agree with you that a lot of our life satisfaction is tied into our fulfillment in our work, right? So many people's identity is tied to their work. So many people's ability to take care of their family is tied to their work, and their mental health and their state of mind is tied to their work quality of life. You know, it's a big deal. Like, I think doing it right, taking an intellectual approach to it, over time will have people understand that this is a very complex and nuanced thing where a lot of very smart, dedicated people are spending their time, and we need to give more attention to it, more resources to it, and put more priority on it. And I've seen that start to evolve over the last 10, 15 years. Because when I first started, it was like, HR, like, just do me a favor and go sit in the back, and we'll let you know when we need something, if there's some sort of employee issue. And now it's like, HR, come sit here and help us make strategic decisions, right, that are gonna help us change the face of the business and make things better going forward. And that'll slowly continue to evolve. But yeah, it drives me nuts, because I think we're doing something really, really, really important on a lot of different levels. I'll give you one more example of it. Between 2012 and 2018, We relocated 300 different people to South Florida for roles at various companies that we work with, right? A lot of the companies at the time had relocation strategies. I think we did some research on this about a year and a half ago. Of that, 270 are still in Florida, okay? That's pretty great. So we helped move people from places like New York, Toronto, California, whatever it may be, right? And brought them here to our economy. They've stayed here, worked to different companies and different jobs, but they're in our economy contributing to what we're doing. I don't know, that feels super powerful, right? Yeah. And that feels like that's something that's really matters. And so I don't know, I know I'm preaching to the gospel here, but for me, like I really appreciate the attitude you take towards this and how important you see it is, because I think if more people understood it, they would see it the same way we do. And hopefully over time that evolves.
There's a phrase that was in place at MomMed before I joined, but it's been kind of my guiding principle since joining. And my team might even roll their eyes if they hear me say this, but it is to modernize medicine takes more than a great product. It takes a great team. And I think it really is that it takes people, you know, it takes people kind of in the right role, you know, in the right environment to do great things. And, you know, hiring is a big part of that. It's not the whole part of it. You know, there are so many different aspects to creating like great productive cultures that are positive and things like that. But hiring is certainly at the forefront. You know,
you're big one. And listen, I mean, let's go back. Great products are built by people, right? Yeah, right. Exactly. At the end of the day, great sales models are built by people. Great marketing programs are built by people. Okay. When we look at Apple, we're just in wonderment about how incredible an iPhone is and what a great product it is. Yeah, it was built by Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive. Like those are the guys who are like, they're people. So like, that's the thing. Like we want to talk about financial services and retail. And it's like, you know what? But it's all people-based companies because people are the ones that are doing the heavy lifting. Now, with AI, who knows? Maybe that's changing in 20, 30 years. But for now, that's what it is. And that's why that is the most important resource in any company. The best talent are the ones that really come together and make the best teams that drive the greatest innovations and the greatest companies. So yeah, I mean, okay. People are getting annoyed now. They're just like, all right, dude, we get it. You care about people and recruiting.
I will say though, I do think AI is going to shift our landscape, obviously tremendously, but you'll never get rid of the people. It will just be harnessing the power of AI.
Enhance human interactions, not replace them. I mean, there's some administrative things that none of us want to do. Maybe we can move to a 4-day work week. I heard that the other day. Maybe there's different things that happen because of it. But human intervention in our work, it's just, especially here in this country, it's too much part of who we are. I don't see it changing dramatically, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years at least. I'm interested in what you think a great TA function looks and feels like in a large company. Like, what are the characteristics of a well-oiled TA machine? What do you hear hiring managers say? What do you hear, you know, the C-level saying? Like, what does it look like? What does it feel like?
Sure. I mean, my frame of reference is certainly MomMed. I'm connected to my peers across. You know, I think a great TA function, you know, certainly it's one where, you know, your chief executive or your chief people officer isn't like constantly hammered by the business. Like, why don't I have talent? So I think talent acquisition is one of those things when it's not working, it's really on fire, you know, and if it is working, people definitely appreciate it. You know, for me, it's really aligning talent acquisition with business strategy. Making sure that it's not seen as a transaction, like, oh, go find me X, you know, but it's really understanding what is the need for, you know, for the opening or the opportunity and then being able to create a hiring process, a sourcing strategy, things like that, that surfaces that talent and assesses that talent. So really great hiring occurs when hiring is a priority for the business and there's alignment. Mm-hmm. Between the business leaders and the talent acquisition leaders, right? And the people doing the role.
Well said. It's helping the business and the hiring leaders understand their role, how important it is, helping them prioritize it, making it as seamless as possible on them so it's not a burden, and then helping them obviously identify great talent, right? Because at the end of the day, HR in many times is a facilitator for the great talent, right? We'll help find it. We'll help you kind of manage it, right? But at the end of the day, like you're coming to work for that manager. You're coming to work at that company. You're coming to, you know, we need you to be discerning when it comes to the type of talent that worked for you and what's on your team. So totally agree with you. I think that's completely spot on.
And I also think it's important too to understand like what is a good part of the opportunity? You know, like what is the sell to a candidate or candidate pool? And what are, you know, what are the things that are not so easy? So being very transparent, from the beginning, like this works really well here. But if you're looking for a very, you know, why environment, we may not be for you, and really having that kind of clear communication from the get-go. So
yeah, there's two aspects to that. We all appreciate self-awareness in people, but self-awareness in organizations is also a very big thing, right? Because at the end of the day, individuals are tying themselves to a career based on what they think they're hearing in the interview. And then my gosh, what a heart-dropping or stomach-dropping feeling to have a great interview. You're so excited about a job and you get in there 2 weeks. Uh-oh, this isn't what I thought it was, right? It's completely different, right? And that happens. And that's happened to people. So I totally agree with you. Keeping that realistic job preview in mind, creating an experience that's transparent and lets them know this is what we're great at, this is where we need help, I think is a really, really important thing.
And then one more thing.
I love it.
When you talk about, you know, like what is really important at the more strategic level, I think it's your talent acquisition leader understanding, you know, what the objectives are, what the business objectives are for the business, and being able to create and execute on a strategy that meets those needs. And so I can say when we were 20 people, you know, it looked very different than today when we're approaching 2,000 people, and really staying ahead of that. And a lot of the things that I'm hearing now that are really crucial, especially in niche areas, is pipeline. Is just, you know, let's cultivate the pipeline of talent and have that in place so that when we're going after some of these roles, it's not such a long cycle time but that we really are able to execute, because things are moving so quickly. I feel like the world has accelerated, you know, 2x in the past 4 years. And so as somebody in talent acquisition, we have to accelerate 2x. And, you know, that ability to do that is really an imperative.
So I'll tell you, in 2015, we had a client, well-recognized client down here in South Florida. They had outsourced recruitment to us. We did their campus recruiting. We did their corporate hiring. Like we were their talent acquisition function. And we were having success, right? And I remember the new leadership came in, they brought a new CAO, and he was from Brazil, and he had a very kind of authoritative and direct way of speaking, really engaging guy. And I remember one of the things that we had done before we got there, their time to fill was like 65 days before we got there. And we had taken it down over the course of like 2 years to 28 days. So we cut it in half. And so we were feeling real good. And like the CIO was coming in to meet with us, and we were just so excited to be able to show him kind of the results and all that good stuff. And he comes and he looks at it and he sees 28 days and he goes, I want 0 days time to fill. And we go, what? And he goes, if this is not good enough until it's 0 days time to fill. And he like slammed down the paper and like went out of the room. And I look around at the people in there and I go, what are we supposed to do? And really what he was saying was exactly what you're just talking about. You should be proactively pipelining to such a point that the people come before the role. And now we're taking people that we know fit our behavioral profile, our cultural profile, our talent profile. And now we have like these early in career talent opportunities that we can get them in the pipeline, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm happy to tell you that actually we built one of the best junior analyst capabilities there was, because we were able to recognize in individuals that were going to be a good fit and get them in this pipeline. And on those jobs, we had 0 days time to fill, which thusly brought our time to fill even further down. We never got to zero, though. But that is a really important lesson that we learned early on about how being proactive and strategic is very important instead of being reactive and tactical. We've talked a little bit about the future of TA. I'm interested. Where do you think it's going? What are the changes? I mean, like you said, the rate of change, Moore's Law, is going crazy right now like it never has. What do you think is going to be the impact on talent acquisition?
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting time to be in talent acquisition. It's a pivotal point where you're either, you know, you either jump on, you know, you jump on the train, or you're definitely going to be left behind. Certainly, there's so many applications for AI. I think you and I have talked about this too. You know, we're already using it in many of the functions of recruiting that have historically taken so much time. It's able to just, you know, really, you know, cut those pieces, those elements out. I think as AI matures, you know, there's always, you know, we've been looking at AI since 2018, 2019 in terms of candidate matching, but that's a very like slippery slope with respect to AI, because you want to make sure that you're not you know, discriminating or, you know, have some kind of unintended bias in that process. And so I think, though, as AI matures and, you know, you will see the ability for, you know, for AI to learn, okay, like this is what works for mod med, you know, they like tenure, they like, you know, kind of these skills or to see this kind of progression in a career for more senior roles or things like that. And you'll be able to apply that, which will just speed up that time to fill with quality candidates. So I think it's a really exciting time.
So I'm really passionate about the talent acquisition HR software space. Mm-hmm. And I felt for a very long time that there's no end-to-end solution out there that makes everybody happy. Nobody really gets delighted about HR technology, unfortunately, for the most part. And one of the things that you pointed out about the algorithmic bias and the unintended consequences that come with leveraging AI for candidate matching, which you're right, is the kind of the biggest area. It's probably the biggest software area too, right? It's why all these services businesses like mine exist. What we decided pretty early on was we were not playing in that red ocean. Like, that's what our services business does. We help you find great talent. We'll leverage our technology to do that. We're not going to have AI, you know, cause biases and unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue to do what we do, just leverage technology to do it better. Where we think AI really can help is around everything post candidate selection. So once we know we have the candidate, right, what are the requirements of the position? What are the... how do we select the right person, but not matching, right? How do we generate questions? How do we look at our own biases? And what we really don't want to do is have the AI make the decision. We want the AI to provide information like a concierge. When you go to a new city and you go to a nice hotel and you're like, you know, what do I do here? You don't want the concierge saying, you go to this show and this restaurant and nothing else. You want the concierge coming to you and saying, all right, here's the deal. What do you like? Here's this, here's that, here's some options. Boom, you make a great decision. You feel very good. That's what I ultimately see the power of AI and software being in this next kind of generation. And that's why we're building something that's a little bit of a hybrid in terms of the services offering and the technology offering, because we think that that's a big opportunity. And quite frankly, I know why. It's so funny because as you get in the software space as a services company and you kind of know what's going on in this space more so than software people just building software, if you ask, we've asked thousands of hiring managers, what's the biggest problem in talent acquisition? They all say, 72% say the same thing. I don't have enough good quality candidates. It is a reflexive answer that they all say, right? That can be based on a bunch of factors depending on their internal TA, their agencies, their network, whatever it may be, okay? But what we have found as we delve deeper is that's not the actual problem, okay? Yeah, of course, but here's the reality of the situation. The people's information is more out there than everywhere. We have tools like Indeed and LinkedIn and all these different things that we can find everybody out there. There's no more somebody's precious little black book that I had in 1988 that I have access to that you don't, that you need, right? We all know what's out there. Now it's when you we've identified somebody. How do you get them excited about wanting to work at your company? Even if they're passive and doing something else, right? That they're enjoying, right? How do you know when they're sitting in front of you that they're the right person for the role? How are you teaming up their behavioral capability, their technical capability, their motivation and their situation to what you bring to the table, your team dynamic, your management dynamic, so that you know, and this is where MSH is always differentiated. Most companies in our space on the services side are focused on getting the butt in the seat. And that's what they're doing. And so if you think about how you build a business process to make that your outcome, because that's what happens when that's your outcome, it's very different than when your outcome, which here at our company is, we want to know a year later, is that somebody you'd rehire? And is that, would that person take that job again? We know then we did something good and valuable to your company. And so we design our process differently. And so it's funny because I know why all these softwares out there are these like recruiter.com, what is a ZipRecruiter, whatever it is, like matching, we're gonna find you candidates, we're gonna simplify this and you don't like this and we're gonna make it easier on you. And I say, forget all that. This is complex, this is nuanced, it's something you have to get right. You need a co-pilot that's gonna sit next to you and help you get it right. That's it. We're not gonna commodify it. We're not going to take it off your plate. We're not going to give you an answer. We're going to help you be better at it. So anyway.
Because at the end of the day, like we said, it's people. It's people's lives. And it's your people, your hiring teams, and the work that we're trying to do here and you know, motivated to get, you know, accomplishments there. And it's the people who you're putting in the seat. We have that, you know, we're filling a need, not a seat, is really what mm-hmm. we aim for. And making sure that we are hiring well and hiring right.
Whenever we think about automating something, we think about what's transactional, what's commoditized, right? What doesn't take a lot of intuitiveness or strategy, right? And quite frankly, there's a lot of people in our business who talk in a very transactional, commoditized way. And so that thus, well, let's automate it. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There are things that we can take off the plate that are administrative burdens, right? That we can have help with technology from. AI can help us make better decisions. There's no question about that. But this human interaction, I'm coming to work for you. You're coming to work for me, right? This rapport, this trust we build, that's inherently human.
So, and you can't AI that for sure.
No.
Where we've had success, and I think there's more to do there, even is like scheduling automation. You know, like we don't want people spending too much time, like finding the right time on calendars. Those are things that are ripe
yes.
that we've been able to automate. As you were saying, building out like an interview plan or a job posting or, you know, things like that. Those are things that might take somebody hours to craft, but you can do that now very quickly with AI. There are a lot of, was there a lag in the?
No, you're perfect. I'm here. That was perfect. And listen, I will tell you this. When we talk to corporate TA, right? And we talk to them about what we're building. And I ask them, what's your favorite thing about recruiting? Most of the time, the answer is, I love talking to people. I love building relationships. I like finding great people. Awesome. How much of your time do you spend doing that?
Wow, that's
20%. 20%. Yeah. I'm out herding cats. I'm writing job descriptions. I'm trying to get feedback. I'm doing all these things. Wow. What if we built software that did that for you so you could focus on what you love doing?
Which is
people are pretty excited.
Yeah, it's interesting. My boss recently, we were just having an in-passing conversation, and she's like, you know, our recruiters need to be recruiting, you know, and it's interesting because I think about all the things that sometimes go onto a recruiter's plate right now. And it just has stuck with me. And so I'm like peeling back the onion on my team. I'm like, how much time are you spending actually doing the recruiting part of it versus chasing feedback or, you know, it might be building out a dashboard, you know, whatever the case might
be. Yeah, what do they say?
Yeah. You know, not as much as they'd like, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. Not as much as you like. It's varies probably company to company, but not as much as you like. And listen, when we started MSH, that was one of the first things I thought about. How does a recruiter spend their time? And one of the things we realized right away, another thing that recruiters spend a lot of time on, sourcing, right? 60% plus is what we found. So my first thought was, all right, hold on. If we were able to put sourcing out of an MSH-based India office, have them do it overnight, see the world the way we do, see the resumes the way we do, understand the requirements the way we do. And now we could have our recruiters spend the majority of their time doing what they love, engaging and qualifying candidates. What does that mean for quality, speed, and all these different things? And it took a lot of work. It turns out it meant a lot. Because if you take that 60% off their plate and focus it on building better relationships and all that good stuff, you're going to get better outcomes. So anyway, I feel like this is sounding like an infomercial, but I'm getting excited talking about talent. It's nice to have somebody that I know sees the world the same way I do. Let's jump into some of the talent focused questions. Do you have a core hiring philosophy for anyone that you bring into your team?
So I would say it's a good question. I think sometimes when you've been hiring, as long as I have, it almost becomes like second nature. And I'm not even aware of some of the strategies that I employ. And I realize that now too, with even having more junior people on my team or things like that. Like for me, what's second nature are things that I've learned through my career. For me, one of the core values that I have, and it's our company value, is aligning passion with purpose. And so that's whether I'm bringing somebody into my team, our own talent acquisition team, or into the company. It's really making sure that there's an alignment. Does this person have the drive about what it is they're doing, whether they are an attorney, a physician, a software developer, engineer, you know, front desk, whatever the thing is? You want people who have that passion for what they're doing. They also have to have the ability, you know, the capability to either do it or learn it, you know, but I think that passion and that drive is a key ingredient that I look for and that we look for in our new hires, because that will, and it's interesting. I was just having a conversation with my son who's entering college this fall, and he was just talking about like how much he loves this major that he has selected. And it's something like we were on our way back from Gainesville, and he's, you know, listening to podcasts around neural network systems and all these things. And he's like, I just want to listen to it. He's like, I just like doing this. You know, this is what I want to do. This isn't something that It's just like a check the box. And I think that it really matters. You just have
to. I have a lot of kids myself. And one of the things I tell them is, you'll know you found something that you love when you're doing it and thinking about it in your free time. So like, yeah, we have all these sports and stuff, and they go and they practice and they come back from practice and da da da. But when I see them outside, like kicking the ball, or I see them looking up YouTube videos to find out, like, you know, how to do the next, you know, gymnastics move or whatever it may be, that's when you know you're hooked and you have a passion and purpose around that. And that's the stuff that you're going to be the most successful at, not the stuff that you're going and doing because you think you have to, or mom and dad want you to do it.
It's
the stuff
it looks good on my college app or something like that. Yeah, exactly. It's really about, I love that. That's exactly right. It's like, what is it that, you know, propels you to spend time on it, even when you're not kind of quote unquote getting paid to do it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing that you're going to probably spend. You're not going to quit that. You're probably going to be really good at it. And that's something that can take you a really long way. I love that. Yeah. What about, so I'm fascinated. I mean, you've been there 20 to 2000. Is there a memorable interview that comes to mind for anybody at ModMed? Maybe one that really stands out to you?
Oh, I probably wouldn't comment on it.
Well, you don't have to use names. Just tell us kind of like, I had somebody interviewed and this is what happened.
I don't have an interview necessarily that comes to mind at specifically at ModMed for a role. There are a couple of interviews that I've had. One situation I had was at a career fair, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, where there was food being served. And I remember there was, you know, a candidate and he wanted to come and meet ModMed. He's like, oh, you know, and then, but he had food. So then he like licked his fingers and then tried to shake my hand. And I was like, oh, no, that's okay.
No, thanks. I'm good.
No, thank you. So, you know, little minor etiquette, you know, issues I think are really important.
Sure.
But I would say, you know, as far as, God, we've done so many interviews, I think the best interviews are always the one where the candidate is taking an active role in the process. You know, when they're interviewing me more than I'm interviewing them, those are the best candidates, because, you know, they're taking it very seriously. And they're making, you know, they're not just trying to get an offer. They're really trying to, you know, make sure it's a good fit.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, if I've ever gone to an interview at lunch, I'm going to tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not getting ribs or anything like that, because I would be the guy that's like eating it like a caveman and I got barbecue sauce on my forehead. And then if I'm going to interview for lunches, and frankly, I don't interview anymore, but if I did, it'd be nice little fork and knife salad and might not even eat the whole thing. You got to make sure you keep that etiquette. You got to make sure that you show your best self. All right. What about a favorite question? Do you have a favorite question that you like to ask in interviews?
I do. Excuse me. My favorite question is really, it's an insight question and it gets to motivation. And it really is like, you know, tell me about, you know, your most significant accomplishment, you know, something that you're really proud of. And it can be personal or professional, you know, and depending on the circumstances, I might steer the question to be more professional or be more recent, you know, relevant to the role, things like that. But I think really, you know, when you talk to somebody about, you know, and ask them to describe something that they're really proud of, an accomplishment that they had, and then you peel that onion back and you figure out like why, what was their role, you can really learn a lot about someone and help inform, is this the right position? Is this the right fit?
I love that.
Yeah. That's really another cool. And you didn't ask me this question, but I'll share with you. This is one of my favorite stories around talent acquisition. We had somebody interview with us for a technical role. She had been in with a previous company for a long time, very tenured. We have a pretty robust technical assessment that we have all of our software engineers do as part of the interview process. She aced it. She did so well. And the team was like, wow, she did really well. But during the interview, she was very quiet. She was not engaging. There was a real question around, like, does she have a lot of passion for it? Which, as I said, is a key ingredient for us. And so so the team was like, kind of like, okay, yeah, she's good, but we just don't think we're going to hire her. She sent this follow-up note, and it was a very simple thank you note, but it was thoughtful. I forget exactly what she said, but it was really thoughtful. And I'm like, are you sure you want to let her go? Let me just call her. And I gave her the feedback that the team was just not sure, you know, because they couldn't see her passion. And you know, that just, they weren't sure if she was really interested. That's what I, how I phrased it. We weren't really sure if you're interested in us. We think you did great on the test, but we just weren't getting a lot of interest. And she said, no, I was just so nervous. I, you know, I haven't interviewed in X amount of years. This was my first interview. I didn't know what to say. And she really opened up. I was like, oh, that's amazing. And she's done a great job and has.
She's there and you get her. And like, honestly, like the best partnerships are the ones where you see things beyond a resume. You are able to understand people's motivations. You can make recommendations, even when others are saying, I'm not sure about it. You say, I got a good feel for this. I got a good knowledge of you. That's what makes a great partner in talent at the end of the day. And I am lucky to have that with some customers. And it sounds like you have that with your business team at ModMed. That is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
What about giving a realistic job preview? Or is there anything you do like in the interview for a candidate experience perspective? Because I really want to know, how do you make sure that they understand what they're walking into? And how does that kind of take place within the parameter of the interview?
Yeah, I love that. So this is something when I came, and I've done this with other companies, but one of the things when I first started here at ModMed, we had this process for vetting technical talent, which was, you know, like a regular screen. And then it was a coding exercise. And we put everybody through the coding exercise and to see what they could do. And then immediately after, we did a debrief, a code debrief. So the engineers would talk to the candidate about like why they did things a certain way. The most important part wasn't how well they did on the coding exercise. The most important part was the debrief and like how they interacted and for the engineer, you know, to get an idea of like how they thought through a problem. And so taking that same concept of having some kind of work preview throughout the entire function. So whether you're in talent acquisition or in sales or in customer success, we have some sort of assignment as part of our interview process and then a debrief with the team on, you know, the candidate debriefs with the team post, the interview team, so that the team understands like, oh, the candidate thought they did well. They recognize they didn't do well here. This is how they're thinking through it. And I think for candidates, what that process allows, which is intimidating, like, of course, it's, you know, it's not necessarily always comfortable. You know, I'm not going to pretend that it is, but it really gives candidates a good idea of, okay, this is what it will be like working with these people every day. So because in interviews, everybody's always putting their best foot forward, right? But how long does that last? You know,
work isn't always comfortable either. Like, how are they going to deal in these adverse conditions? If you create this puppy dogs and lollipops experience, and then you get to work and it's not like that, then you don't really have a good model of how they're going to respond in those situations.
Yeah, or a good fit. And it really is, you know, for us, it's really about the fit, like making sure we get the fit right, the technical fit, the how we work fit, you know, all of those pieces. And so I think if you can expose candidates to, like what you said, like a real world preview, you know, of what it might be like to work here, they can make better informed decisions just as much as you can as a hiring team. So
that's really smart stuff. That's good stuff. Good insights. I hope people are taking notes. I want to ask you a couple of things outside of come more day in the life. Is there anything you're working on right now, ModMed, that you're really excited about that gets you up out of bed in the morning? You're juiced.
Everything. but the biggest thing right now that we're really working on that I'm most focused on is, you know, our talent acquisition strategy for product development, you know, and really because, you know, there's a lot of great work happening inside our product development team. And, you know, we've got a lot of innovation happening and it's crucial to the company that we're able to attract great talent to help, you know, get us there. I think we've got great leadership in place. You know, we've got a great vision and a great roadmap. Now it's a lot is about, you know, execution. So for me, it's really how are we going to bring in great technical talent? And we're a tech company, but, you know, sometimes, you know, our tech team is, you know, its growth, you know, sometimes you're investing a lot in R&D and sometimes it's, you know, the focus is on your go-to-market, you know, things like that. But we're really looking at product development specifically. And so but it's fun. I mean, that's where I get my juice too. Like I love engineers. That's my background. It was my husband's background. My son is getting into engineering. And so for me, it's a lot of fun too.
I love that. That is exciting. Yeah. What about, do you have a recommendation on a good book you've read or any good content you've seen lately? Could be a TV show, could be a movie, anything?
Yeah, so this is not talent acquisition related, but it is. I am obsessed with Peter Attia's Outlive. Have you Outlive? Read it?
No, yeah, what is it about?
Dr. Peter Attia. It's about health and wellness,
Okay.
but he is one, in my opinion, brilliant, but also like very data driven and holistic. And he talks a lot about this concept of like medicine 3.0. And so it's really taking control of your own health, knowing your traps, knowing, you know, your markers, and then, you know, some strategies for addressing them. So, and it's really about quality of life, like having, you know, in my 90s, I want to be able to pick up my grandchildren, you know, that's what I want to be able to do. And so like,
how so can by the way, you don't have to answer everything talent acquisition. I want you to be clear. We want you to be a well-rounded individual here on the old Higher Learning. Okay. And I got to tell you, there is a guy named Peter Diamantis. And I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's written a book called Abundance. I recommended this on another show recently, but he's a technology optimist. The one thing that he is obsessed with is life extension. And so he believes, and he says quite clearly, if you're alive for the next 20 years, you're going to live to 150 because of everything that we're doing from a biotechnology perspective and an understanding of a wellness perspective. And he talks about like a lot of the things that you're talking about, like what are the right foods to take in, what is the right exercise regimen, water and sleep, and how important are they to this stress and all these different things. And so I find that fascinating, this idea that our lifespan will grow. And more importantly, like you said, I'm less wanting my lifespan to grow as I'm wanting to be 80, 90 years old and be of true mental faculties and physical faculties, yes, and emotional faculties and all that good stuff. And it feels like that's happening to a degree. And that they're working on this stuff. So pretty exciting, yeah, pretty cool stuff. So I would definitely recommend listening to him. That's one of his big things is life extension, but he talks a lot about AI technology. He has a podcast called Moonshots. I know I shouldn't be recommending another podcast on my podcast, but Peter Diamantis is amazing. And that's a great book. You should definitely check it out.
I will. And you check out Outlive and tell me, Peter Attia, okay, is the name, but he also has a podcast called Drive, which is good.
Too. I'm in. So I was going to ask you if like at some point we could go get a drink, but it sounds like what we're going to need to do is get some grass. We choose.
I know.
We're being health nuts over here. So I love it.
Take a lap someplace.
Take a lap. We'll do a run. Like, hey, you want to have a meeting? We'll do a run around the block. I'll be out of breath. I won't be very good in that scenario. All right. Last question. If you had to give young Diane, 20 years old, before she took that job in San Diego, advice that you didn't know then, but you know now, or even anybody early in career talent, something that you've learned over your course of your career, what would it be?
Trust yourself. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, I think when I entered the job market or the world or whatever, you know, I always assumed everybody knew more than I did, you know, and it took me a while to realize, yeah, a lot of people know more than I did, but I also had like a perspective or something to contribute. And I think, and maybe this was just a, you know, being a female kind of in tech or something like that, you know, some self-doubt. So I think just trusting yourself and having fun, you know, making sure you're having fun. You know, that's a big part of it for me.
I really love that. That is really good advice. Diane, I really enjoyed our conversation, maybe a little bit too much. I hope our listeners get a kick out of it because I'm super passionate about this stuff. I know you are too. So really appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot.
Yes, and definitely we'll have to go for that lap or wheatgrass or beer, whatever it is.
We're going to do it. It'll be a light beer if we do.
All right.
Thanks, Diane. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Bye.